Section 2 of The Haunter of the Dark by Howard Phillips Lovecraft. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Piotr Natter. A yawning and unprotected cellar window in the rear furnished the needed aperture. Peering in, Blake saw a subterranean gulf of cobwebs and dust, faintly lit by the western sun's filtered rays. Debris, old barrels and ruined boxes and furniture of numerous sorts met his eye, though over everything lay a shroud of dust which softened all sharp outlines. The rusted remains of a hot air furnace showed that the building had been used and kept in shape as late as mid-Victorian times. Acting almost without conscious initiative, Blake crawled through the window and let himself down to the dust-carpeted and debris-strewn concrete floor. The vaulted cellar was a vast one, without partitions, and in a corner far to the right, amid dense shadows, he saw a black archway evidently leading upstairs. He felt a peculiar sense of oppression at being actually within the great spectral building, but kept it in check as he cautiously scouted about, finding a still intact barrel amid the dust, and rolling it over to the open window to provide for the exit. Then, bracing himself, he crossed the wide, cobweb-festooned space toward the ark. Half-choked with the omnipresent dust and covered with ghostly gossamer fibers, he reached and began to climb the worn stone steps which rose into the darkness. He had no light, but groped carefully with his hands. After a sharp turn, he felt a closed door ahead, and a little fumbling revealed its ancient latch. It opened inward, and beyond it he saw a dimly illumined corridor lined with worm-eaten paneling. Once on the ground floor, Blake began exploring in a rapid fashion. All the inner doors were unlocked, so that he freely passed from room to room. The colossal nave was an almost eldritch place, with its drifts and mountains of dust over box pews, altar, hourglass pulpit, and sounding board and its titanic ropes of cobweb, stretching among the pointed arcs of the gallery and entwining the clustered Gothic columns. Over all this hushed desolation played a hideous leaden light as the declining afternoon sun sent its rays through the strange, half-blackened panes of the great apsidal windows. The paintings on those windows were so obscured by soot that Blake could scarcely decipher what they had represented, but from the little he could make out, he did not like them. The designs were largely conventional, and his knowledge of obscure symbolism told him much concerning some of the ancient patterns. The few saints depicted bore expressions distinctly open to criticism, while one of the windows seemed to show merely a dark space with spirals of curious luminosity scattered about in it. Turning away from the windows, Blake noticed that the cobwebbed cross above the altar was not of the ordinary kind, but resembled the primordial Ankh, or Crux Ansata of shadowy Egypt. In a rare vestry room beside the apse, Blake found a rotting desk and ceiling-high shelves of mildewed, disintegrating books. Here, for the first time, he received a positive shock of objective horror, for the titles of those books told him much. They were the black, forbidden things which most sane people have never even heard of, or have heard of only in furtive, timorous whispers. The banned and dreaded repositories of equivocal secrets and immemorial formula which have trickled down the stream of time from the days of man's youth and the dim, fabulous days before man was. He had himself read many of them, a Latin version of the abhorrent Necronomicon, the sinister Liber Ivonis, the infamous Cult de Gaulle of Comte d'Arlette, the Unaussprachlichen Kulten of von Jungs, and old Ludwig Prince's hellish De Vermis Mysteries. But there were others he had known merely by reputation or not at all, the Pnacotic Manuscripts, the Book of Zian, and a crumbling volume of wholly unidentifiable characters, yet with certain symbols and diagrams shudderingly recognizable to the occult student. Clearly the lingering local rumors had not lied. This place had once been the seat of an evil older than mankind and wider than the known universe. In the ruined desk was a small leather-bound record book filled with entries in some odd cryptographic medium. The manuscript writing consisted of the common traditional symbols used today in astronomy and anciently in alchemy, astrology, and other dubious arts. The devices of the sun, moon, planets, aspects, and zodiac signs, here massed in solid pages of text, with divisions and paragraphings suggesting that each symbol answered to some alphabetical letter. In the hope of later solving the cryptogram, Blake bore off this volume in his coat pocket. Many of the great tomes on the shelves fascinated him unutterably, and he felt tempted to borrow them at some later time. He wondered how they could have remained undisturbed so long. Was he the first to conquer the clutching, pervasive fear which had for nearly 60 years protected this deserted place from visitors? Having now thoroughly explored the ground floor, Blake ploughed again through the dust of the spectral nave to the front vestibule, where he had seen a door and staircase, presumably leading to the blackened tower and steeple, objects so long familiar to him at a distance. The ascent was a choking experience, for dust lay thick, while the spiders had done their worst in the constricted place. The staircase was a spiral with high, narrow wooden treads, and now and then Blake passed a clouded window, looking dizzily out over the city. Though he had seen no robes below, he expected to find a bell or peal of bells in the tower whose narrow, louver-board-lensed windows his field glass had studied so often. Here he was doomed to disappointment, for when he attained the top of the stairs, he found the tower chamber vacant of chimes and clearly devoted to vastly different purposes. The room, about 15 feet square, was faintly lighted by 4 lensed windows, one on each side, which were glazed within their screening of decayed louver boards. These had been further fitted with tight, opaque screens, but the latter were now largely rotted away. In the center of the dust-laden floor rose a curiously angled stone pillar dome, 4 feet in height and 2 in average diameter, covered on each side with bizarre, crudely incised and wholly unrecognizable hieroglyphs. On this pillar rested a metal box of peculiarly asymmetrical form, its hinged lid thrown back, and its interior holding what looked beneath the decade-deep dust to be an egg-shaped or irregularly spherical object some 4 inches through. Around the pillar in a rough circle were 7 high-backed Gothic chairs, still largely intact, while behind them, ranging along the dark paneled walls, were 7 colossal images of crumbling, black-painted plaster, resembling more than anything else the cryptic carven megaliths of mysterious Easter Island. In one corner of the cobwebbed chamber, a ladder was built into the wall, leading up to the closed trapdoor of the windowless steeple above. As Blake grew accustomed to the feeble light, he noticed odd bas-reliefs on the strange open box of yellowish metal. Approaching, he tried to clear the dust away with his hands and handkerchief, and saw that the figurings were of a monstrous and utterly alien kind, depicting entities which, though seemingly alive, resembled no known life form ever evolved on this planet. The 4-inch-seeming sphere turned out to be a nearly black, red-striated polyhedron with many irregular flat surfaces, either a very remarkable crystal of some sort or an artificial object of carved and highly polished mineral matter. It did not touch the bottom of the box, but was held suspended by means of a metal band around its center, with 7 queerly designed supports extending horizontally to angles of the box's inner walls near the top. This stone, once exposed, exerted upon Blake an almost alarming fascination. He could scarcely tear his eyes from it, and as he looked at its glistening surfaces, he almost fancied it was transparent, with half-formed worlds of wonder within. Into his mind floated pictures of alien orbs, with great stone towers and other orbs with Titan mountains and no mark of life, and still remoter spaces where only a stirring and vague blackness told of the presence of consciousness and will. When he did look away, it was to notice a somewhat regular mound of dust in the far corner near the ladder to the steeple. Just why it took his attention, he could not tell, but something in its contours carried a message to his unconscious mind. Ploughing toward it and brushing aside the hanging cobwebs as he went, he began to discern something grim about it. Hand and handkerchief soon revealed the truth, and Blake gasped with a baffling mixture of emotions. It was a human skeleton, and it must have been there for a very long time. The clothing was in shreds, but some buttons and fragments of cloth bespoke a man's grey suit. There were other bits of evidence. Shoes, metal clasps, huge buttons for round cuffs, a stickpin of bygone pattern, a reporter's badge with the name of the old Providence telegram, and a crumbling leather pocketbook. Blake examined the latter with care, finding within it several bills of antiquated issue, a celluloid advertising calendar from 1893, some cards with the name Edwin M. Lillibridge, and a paper covered with penciled memoranda. This paper held much of a puzzling nature, and Blake read it carefully at the dim westward window. Its disjointed text included such phrases as the following. Professor Enoch Bowen, home from Egypt, May 1844. Buys old Free Will Church in July. His archaeological work and studies in occult well known. Dr. Drown of Fourth Baptist warns against starry wisdom in sermon 29 of December 1844. Congregation 97 by end of 45. 1846, three disappearances, first mention of shining trapezohedron. Seven disappearances, 1848, stories of blood sacrifice begin. Investigation 1853 comes to nothing, stories of sounds. Father O'Malley tells of devil worship with box found in great Egyptian ruins. Says they call up something that can't exist in light, flees a little light, and banished by strong light, then has to be summoned again. Probably got this from deathbed confession of Father X. Freeney, who had joined Starry Wisdom in 49. These people say the shining trapezohedron shows them heaven and other worlds, and that the Hunter of the Dark tells them secrets in some way. Story of Orrin B. Eddy, 1853. They call it up by gazing at the crystal, and have a secret language of their own. 200 or more in congregation, 1863, exclusive of men at front. Irish Boys Mob Church in 1869 after Patrick Regan's disappearance. Veiled article in J, 14 March, 72, but people don't talk about it. Six disappearances in 1876. Secret committee calls on Mayor Doyle. Action promised February 1877. Church closed in April. Gang, Federal Hill Boys, threatened doctor and vestryman in May. 181 persons leave city before the end of 77. Mention no names. Ghost stories began around 1880. Try to ascertain truth of report that no human being has entered church since 1877. Ask Lenigan for photograph of place taken 1851. Restoring the paper to the pocketbook and placing the latter in his coat, Blake turned to look down at the skeleton in the dust. The implications of the notes were clear, and there could be no doubt but that this man had come to the deserted edifice 42 years before in quest of a newspaper sensation which no one else had been bold enough to attempt. Perhaps no one else had known of his plan, who could tell? But he had never returned to his paper. Had some bravely suppressed fear risen to overcome him and bring on sudden heart failure? Blake stooped over the gleaming bones and noted their peculiar state. Some of them were badly scattered, and a few seemed oddly dissolved at the ends. Others were strangely yellowed, with vague suggestions of charring. This charring extended to some of the fragments of clothing. The skull was in a very peculiar state, stained yellow, and with a charred aperture in the top, as if some powerful acid had eaten through the solid bone. What had happened to the skeleton during its 4 decades of silent entombment here, Blake could not imagine. Before he realized it, he was looking at the stone again, and letting its curious influence call up a nebulous pageantry in his mind. He saw processions of robed, hooded figures, whose outlines were not human, and looked on endless leagues of desert lined with carved, sky-reaching monoliths. He saw towers and walls in nighted depths under the sea, and vortices of space where wisps of black mist floated before thin shimmerings of cold purple haze. And beyond all else, he glimpsed an infinite gulf of darkness, where solid and semi-solid forms were known only by their windy stirrings, and cloudy patterns of force seemed to superimpose order on chaos, and hold forth a key to all the paradoxes and arcana of the worlds we know. Then, all at once, the spell was broken by an access of gnawing, indeterminate panic fear. Blake choked and turned away from the stone, conscious of some formless alien presence close to him, and watching him with horrible intenseness. He felt entangled with something, something which was not in the stone, but which had looked through it at him, something which would ceaselessly follow him with a cognition that was not physical sight. Plainly, the place was getting on his nerves, as well it might in view of his gruesome find. The light was waning, too, and since he had no illuminant with him, he knew he would have to be leaving soon. It was then, in the gathering twilight, that he thought he saw a faint trace of luminosity in the crazily angled stone. He had tried to look away from it, but some obscure compulsion drew his eyes back. Was there a subtle phosphorescence of radioactivity about the thing? What was it that the dead man's notes had said concerning a shining trapezohedron? What, anyway, was this abandoned lair of cosmic evil? What had been done here, and what might still be lurking in the bird-shunt windows? It seemed now as if an elusive touch of fetor had arisen somewhere close by, though its source was not apparent. Blake seized the cover of the long open box and snapped it down. It moved easily on its alien hinges and closed completely over the unmistakably glowing stone. At the sharp click of the closing, a soft stirring sound seemed to come from the steeple's eternal blackness overhead, beyond the trap door. Rats, without question, the only living thing to reveal their presence in this accursed pile since he had entered it. And yet that stirring in the steeple frightened him horribly, so that he plunged almost wildly down the spiral stairs across the ghoulish nave into the vaulted basement, out amidst the gathering dust of the deserted square, and down through the teeming, fear-haunted alleys and avenues of Federal Hill, towards the sane central streets and the home-like brick sidewalks of the college district. End of section 2.